The Infrastructure and Strategies Committee will come to order. Missy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Payne.
Here.
Vice Chair Garrison.
Here.
Committee Whip Smith.
Here.
Ranking Member Hunchowski.
Here.
Representative Andrade is excused. Representative Votana.
Here.
Representative Brackett.
Here.
Representative Buchanan.
Here.
Representative Cassell.
Here.
Representative Cheney.
Here.
Representative Escalante.
Here.
Representative Fabrizio.
Here.
Representative Gottlieb.
Here.
Representative Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Lopez.
Here.
Representative McFarland.
Here.
Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon. Representative Plasencia.
Here.
Representative Robinson.
Here.
Representative Schoaf. Representative Stevenson is excused. Representative Tomcow is excused. Representative Trunell.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Show a quorum present. Thank you, Missy. Members, if you will, please silence your cell phones and communication devices, as well as members in the audience. So a few comments. Members, last week, in an effort to get started kind of early and meet our time frame, I was remiss in recognizing Vice Chair Garrison and Ranking Member Hunchowski, and as well as our committee whip. So I want to give them just a moment if they have anything to say at all. If they don't, that's fine as well. Vice Chair.
I have nothing to say, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Ranking Member.
That is a bipartisan sentiment. I, too, have nothing to say.
Okay. And our committee whip is Representative Smith. And Representative Smith, thank you for being here. Any comments?
No, Chair, I'm fine.
All thank right, good. Now I've fulfilled my duties. Thank you so much. Members today, good morning. And we're going to have several conversations today on water supply needs to continue learning more about water and water reuse. Today we have three presentations on our agenda. And I'd ask the members to hold their questions until each of the presentations are done. The first will be an update on implementation of Senate Bill 64 by DEP, followed by the Southwest Florida Water Management District presentation on water reuse, and finally Plant City presentation on water reuse. So we will start off with the update on implementation of Senate Bill 64 by DEP. And to have today's conversation begin is the Department of Environmental Protection will provide an update on Senate Bill 64. The presentation will be given by Mr. Michael Lynch, who is Director of the Division of Water Resource Management at DEP. Mr. Lynch, welcome and thank you for being here today. You're recognized.
Thank you, sir, and thank you, everyone, for having me here today. So, like was said, stated, I will be presenting on Senate Bill 64 implementation and, in general, reuse. Moving right into it, water reuse is the treatment and recycling of wastewater for a beneficial purpose. This can include agriculture and irrigation, groundwater replenishment, industrial processes, environmental restoration, and potable water supplies. Water reuse is a critical component of meeting the state's existing and future water resource needs. In 2021, reuse capacity in Florida totaled approximately 2,429 million gallons per day. Approximately 908 million gallons per day of reclaimed water were used for a wide range of beneficial purposes. The 2,429 million gallons per day of reuse capacity represents approximately 87% of the domestic wastewater treatment capacity and accounts for 53% of the total wastewater flow in Florida. So moving on, Senate Bill 64 was unanimously passed by the Florida legislature in 2021. It was signed into law on June 29th, 2021. The goal is to eliminate all non-beneficial discharge to surface waters. On November 1st, 2021, the domestic wastewater treatment facilities with surface water discharges were required to submit a plan to the department on how they would eliminate non-beneficial discharge. The department had 9 months to review and approve said plans. The rule that was put into effect was 403.064(17) Florida statute. This provided for some continuing discharge under provisions within the statute. It provided for exemptions. It provided for enforcement on the department's behalf for failure to submit a plan or to have a plan approved within that time frame. In addition, it requires the DEP to submit a report annually to the Florida legislature, which we just did so at the end of December. So plan submittals, as I said, we had 9 months to review these plans. We have done so, and every plan has been conditionally or fully approved. The plan needed to contain a few things, one of which is the average gallons per day of effluent, reclaimed water, or reuse water that will no longer be discharged to surface water. The average gallon per day, which would continue under one of the provisions outlined within the statute. In addition, the level of treatment that the discharging water that would continue under a provision would experience. In addition, within the rule in December 2021, it was required for all wastewater treatment plants to update us annually, not only on where they are at with their plan, but their implementation, any new modifications to said plan. In addition to that, where they are with treatment of their currently discharged water. So for plans to be approved, they needed to meet one of three criteria, essentially telling us, hey, we are eliminating all surface water discharges, we're going to meet the ocean outfall statute, or which at least selecting at least one provision under the statute for which they can discharge. One important thing to note here is that for the facilities that did elect to have a discharge, which would be considered beneficial, they can select more than one, and we did see that from most of the facilities that proposed that in their plan. This here outlines the provisions for which a wastewater facility can continue to discharge. The discharge is associated with an indirect potable reuse project. The discharge is associated with wet weather discharge in compliance with an applicable standard within their MPDS permit. In addition, the discharge is associated with a stormwater management system where subsequently it'll be withdrawn and used for irrigation purposes. In addition, the facility operates a wastewater treatment plant that is going to use a reuse system that uses 90% of their annual flow, or discharge provides a direct ecological or benefit to a potable water source. This would be meeting rehydration of wetlands or meeting minimum flow. The statute also allows for exemptions. These are outlined for domestic wastewater treatment facilities that are located in a fiscally constrained county, a domestic wastewater treatment plant that is located in a municipality that is entirely within a rural area of opportunity, a domestic wastewater treatment plant that is located in a municipality that has less than a total of $10 million in total revenue, or a domestic wastewater treatment plant that is a mobile home park and has an operator and produces less than 300,000 gallons daily. So moving forward, here's some of the information that we have compiled in our annual report to the Florida Legislature. There was 162 wastewater facilities that would needed to comply with Senate Bill 64. Of those, 33 of those facilities were found to meet exemptions. Of the 129 that submitted plans, 27 proposed total elimination of surface water discharge, while the remaining 102 provided one or more provisions. In addition to the information they submit annually, they also will submit the total amount that is eliminated, the total amount of discharge that will continue, the treatment level for any continued discharges, and any modifications. Based on the most recent report that came out at the end of December, 470 million gallons per day of surface water discharge is proposed to be eliminated by January 1st, 2032. 482 million gallons a day will continue as a beneficial discharge under one of the provisions. And in addition, in 2022, we saw 11 million gallons a day already be eliminated. So an update on our reuse rulemaking. Phase one was completed in August 2021. Phase one really showed we opened up 62.610, our reuse rulemaking, to make it consistent with our other Title 62 chapters. This expanded the use of reclaimed water. This was to make it acceptable to use for hydrostatic testing for force mains, in addition, dust control for construction projects, and then also for aesthetic purposes for indoor and outdoor activities such as fountains and things of that nature. Phase two is currently underway. The notice of proposed rule will be out within this first quarter of 2022, excuse me. In addition, what this is going to do is establish the criteria for permitting, construction, and compliance of a potable reuse system. Of the plans that were submitted, currently we have four facilities proposing to use the reuse provision. And when the 62.610, our reuse rule, is published, we expect that to see a lot of plans modifications for people to go ahead and implement reuse as well. That is the end of the presentation. If there's any questions I can answer, I'd be happy to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Members, questions? Okay, Representative Escamani, kick us off.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks so much for being here. I'm curious, maybe this is going to be discussed later, but agricultural partners or municipalities that have larger agricultural partners, is there a use of reclaimed water in Florida, examples used in the ag space when it comes to irrigation?
You recognize.
Thank you, sir. Yes, so one of the examples would be some of these facilities would use a stormwater pond for holding to then later pull them out and use them for irrigational purposes.
Follow up? Sure.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate it, and apologize for my naivety to the topic. I'm really, really interested in learning more. When it comes to the municipalities that applied because they had some sort of stormwater or discharge system in place, what's the proportion of municipalities that could not apply because they don't have that infrastructure in place? And is there... Did the legislation lead to some municipalities trying to build up infrastructure to be able to apply, or is there like a capital need for some of the cities or counties?
You recognize.
If they were required to meet Senate Bill 64, they did submit a plan. They may not have said, we're going to go with the reuse option at this point, but we do expect that many more facilities will. With that being said, to answer your question, I would think yes. I would believe so. But we also know that as these facilities come in annually for us to review, we expect the changes to modify as they move on, whereas some say, hey, we're going to try for every provision, and those will be narrowed down as they move forward. And one of the things that we're doing, one with the annual report and then having someone in each district office that works directly with the facilities within their regulated area, we expect that to progress.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Cheney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to slide 8. Can you unpack that a little for us? What's the status of the facilities applying and who has not been approved and what are the reasons for that?
Yeah, I think I have some information on that. So, as I said, there's 162 facilities that needed to comply with Senate Bill 64. They either met an exemption, they went ahead and said, hey, we're going to eliminate all surface water discharge, or they selected one of the provisions. Based on the plans where they stand today, four facilities said we are going to use indirect potable reuse. 50 facilities said we are going to use wet weather discharge, so during heavy rainfall and when they reach peak capacity. What they will do is they will discharge, they will move around some of the treatment methods that are currently in place, and they will blend with treated water and discharge. In addition, there's 18 proposals for stormwater and irrigation purposes. And 34 are going to try to make the 90% reuse. 21 are proposing some sort of ecological or public water benefit. and 10 are meeting the ocean outfall backup. And I just wanted to reiterate that if you add those numbers up, it comes out more to what I said, and that's because a lot of facilities are selecting multiple provisions at this point.
Follow up.
Can you provide that data to us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Members of the questions? Representative Escamati, I'll go back to you.
Thank you, Chair. Just one last question. How many domestic wastewater facilities do we have in Florida? Sorry, Chair. Does that also count septic tanks?
No, it doesn't count septic tanks. I'm unsure on the exact number, but that is information like we can readily get.
Representative Maney, you have a question? Or Mooney, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a minimum standard on nutrient load before it goes into environmentally sensitive areas or into holding ponds or what's the other thing? Aquifer?
Yes.
You're recognized.
Oh, excuse me.
That's right.
Any discharge would have to meet surface water and groundwater standards. And then part of the reuse, whether it's going to be coming as a direct source from a wastewater treatment facility, if it was going to be used for potable drinking water, it would need to meet those standards. In addition, if it was indirect and going into some sort of environmental buffer, it would then go to not only have treatment as it came from the wastewater treatment facility and then go into the environmental buffer like a groundwater, a lake, or a stream, it would come out and then go to a distribution center for drinking water standards and have to meet drinking water standards.
Just follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so the standards are 10101, 551. Do we know those standards? There's a minimum standard. I mean, like Florida Keys, 10101. I think some areas are 551 on nutrient loads. So do we have a minimum standard?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Do you have those numbers?
I don't have it in front of me, but I'd be happy to gather it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Other questions, members? So I've got a few questions myself, and perhaps we should have a class on water use definitions because there are a lot of acronyms in water use world. And so I see some confusion for some of the members. But if we go back to slide, I'm trying to remember slide 2 or 3, I think you gave some percentages on MGD. And I think you just mentioned those are probably in your verbiage, but not so much in the presentation. Can you review those numbers again? Do you mind?
So based on our report we found in 2021, our reuse report, and this is a report that we put out every 5 years. The last one was put out in 2020. We found that reuse capacity for Florida totaled approximately 2,429 million gallons per day, and approximately 908 million gallons per day of reclaimed water were used for beneficial purposes.
Okay, and you can provide that information to us subject to the end of this meeting and further review. I also wanted to ask you, based on the Senate Bill 64, I'm going to ask you to grade yourself from DEP's perspective as to the effectiveness of the bill, the implementation of the bill, and kind of where you are as far as in the next rulemaking phase. You mentioned that. So can you kind of just give me an idea and how well the compliance was with the respect to the plan?
Well,
won't hold you to the grade. You can say pass fail if you want.
I think the grade's an A because I would look at that. We've already had 11 million gallons a day that's already been eliminated from surface water discharge from when we implemented this bill. So I would say it's very effective. And I think that we're going to see that number increase. One, as we have 62610, the amendments to the rule put in place, because I really believe that we're going to see a lot more facilities use reuse, which is going to be an important aspect for drinking water source moving forward.
Right, great. So, members, I want you to hear that, because I want you to hear the positives that come out of what we've done over the last several years. There's often always negatives, but there's some really good positive wins we've heard over the last several years, from the Clean Waterways Bill to Representative Maggard's bill last year. So, is that Representative Cassell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the chair's questioning, with regards to the numbers that you provided, the 2.4 and the 900 million, do you have a breakdown of where that water is actually going? Is there a percentage going to irrigation? Is there a percentage going to drinking water? Do you have those percentages available?
I believe those percentages can be found in our reuse report.
Okay, and is that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that report public, or is that something that we need to request the department to provide?
It is, and we can provide it.
Thank you. Will you do that?
Yes.
Other questions, members? I know I always go back to you for a follow-up, so I'll go back to for a third bite of the apple.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just one last question of the difference between domestic municipal wastewater facilities and then the industrial, and what's the breakdown in Florida? I'm assuming it's majority municipal and domestic, but who are those industrial, what are those companies that are using industrial level?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Yeah, there's going to be more domestic wastewater treatment facilities, and I can get a breakdown of those. And it's, as far as industrial, it's everything from concrete batch plants to power plants. I mean, it runs the gambit.
Good. Any other questions? Mr. Lynch, thank you for being here. Thank you for your presentation. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. So thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, members, next we'll have a presentation by Southwest Florida Water Management District on reuse, and Amanda Rice. You are welcome. Thank you for being here. She is the District Assistant Executive Director. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you.
So just a little bit about our district. We are one of five 16 counties, all or a portion of 16 counties. And a lot of the decisions that we make are driven by the fact that we do have a lot of water constraints in our district. Those are shown here in those areas that are colored. So about two-thirds of our district, we do have constraints on traditional use of groundwater. And that's caused us to need to develop alternative water supplies in order to meet growing demand. This is from our most recent regional water supply plan from 2020. And basically a 20-year look ahead out to 2040 showed us that we needed 210 million gallons per day of new water in our area to support sustainable growth. And the vast majority of that, 70%, 145 MGD, is associated with public supply. So that's to meet that growing population increase. This slide we call our success slide. So this is a 40-year period. And the green line represents our population growth within our 16-county service area. So we've seen a lot of population growth. But our success is shown with those blue bars, which is groundwater use, and also with the orange line, which is total water use. So that would include other types of water, like surface water use. And what we attribute this to is a conservation mindset. We've really developed a nice water ethic in the state of Florida and in our district. Also, we've developed alternative water supplies, and we've implemented a lot of reuse projects. So those three things, conservation, alternative water supply, and reuse projects, have allowed us to see this kind of success. So a little bit on how our district became a leader in reuse in the state of Florida. This went all the way back to the 70s. We were having terrible water quality problems in Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was in bad shape, and the legislature back then went ahead and approved the Grizzle Fig Law. So what that did was required any wastewater treatment plant in or around Tampa Bay to have to increase their standards or upgrade their wastewater treatment plant effluent. So that resulted in very high quality, what we called AWT, or Advanced Wastewater Treatment, quality water coming from those wastewater treatment plants. And it actually did have a very good impact on Tampa Bay. Need is the driver of invention. So what happened with the results of the high quality wastewater? We were seeing tremendous population growth. We really needed to offset groundwater use in order to not cause environmental impacts. We were seeing environmental impacts. So that advanced wastewater treatment caused a connection with the production or the desire to go ahead and use that as a beneficial source. So we began implementing reuse projects in our district, and we incentivized that with our cooperative funding initiative program. So we cooperatively funded counties and municipalities that began to implement these projects. So we were kind of on the forefront due to Grizzle Fig, which has now been implemented in many other places in the state. So we have implemented almost 400 reuse projects in the state of Florida. That's kind of shown there in the graph with those, or the photo, with the purple lines. Those are mostly the traditional public access reuse. That's what that's called, where you're putting that on lawns, golf courses, that sort of thing. So we have spent a significant amount of money. Our governing board has really made this a priority. And it's been a tremendous success for us, because right now 16% of the water use in our district comes from reuse. So this again kind of illustrates how we are a reuse leader, the state of Florida. So nationwide, about 7% reuse, about 40% in the state of Florida, and 57% in our district. So what we're seeing, there's some trends going on now with reuse. We're seeing a decline. We did get a question on agricultural use. We are seeing a decline there. There are some restrictions on how reuse water can be used in agriculture, that it is for crops that have a peel or crops that are cooked when they're made for production. And so it's been really focused on citrus. And we've seen, as you all are aware, a decline in citrus in the entire state. So we, from 2010 to 2021, we went from about 10 MGD of reuse for agriculture down to about 3 MGD, following that citrus trend. We're also seeing a bit of a flat line on golf course development and use of reuse water for golf courses. We've actually seen a lot of golf courses stop using reuse water because they've been converted to some other land use. They're no longer a functioning golf course. We've seen that in about two-thirds of our district, but in our northern area, we're seeing that go up. So it's sort of offsetting. That's mostly associated with the villages. We're also seeing a bit of a reduction in use of reuse water for power plants. So the coal-fired plants do use reuse water for their air scrubber requirements. But a lot of those plants are being converted now to natural gas, and they don't have that same need for that reuse water. So we're seeing a bit of a shift on reliance on public access distribution. That's that use of the purple pipes in the neighborhoods. We're seeing, it's kind of a big paradigm shift. We're seeing utilities much more interested in that reuse water, going from a disposal need to going to the concept of it being a product that has a value and could generate revenue. So there's a tremendous O&M, operation and maintenance cost associated, as well as a capital cost associated with those large distribution systems for reuse water into neighborhoods and so forth. So we're really seeing a big increase in potable reuse, which would convert that water to a drinking water supply. And Senate Bill 64 has really put, you know, some fire to that as well. So our governing board set for us a goal that we should achieve 75% reuse of all reclaimed water in our district by 2040. So as I mentioned before, we're at 57%. So we're making really great progress We have incremental steps that we are trying to meet at given years. But we understand, based on those trends that I was just talking about, the low-hanging fruit has really been picked already. And if we're going to get to that 75%, we're really going to need potable reuse, or actually turning that into a drinking water supply. I mentioned earlier that we have identified by 2040 the need for 145 million gallons per day of new water for public supply. Just to give you an idea of the scale, we estimate, and DEP estimates, that there's between 100 and 150 million gallons per day of surface water discharges in our district from wastewater treatment plants that could be made available for potable reuse projects. So there's a very nice alignment there. Okay, just in summary, we do have our strategic plan priority from our governing board that's really promoting reuse as well as potable reuse specifically. Ms. Spivey is up next. She's going to be talking a little bit more about a statewide survey that was conducted not too long ago that's really indicating support from the public on the concepts. We would have a lot more to do on public engagement, but we saw some initial favorable results on that. And then I also wanted to point out that our district is currently funding through our CFI program, Cooperative Funding Initiative. We're funding projects that will advance the science of potable reuse. We've had a few feasibility studies. We actually have right now two active pilot projects, one with Plant City and one with Polk County. And again, Ms. Spivey is with Plant City, so we really congratulate her and her city on that. And that's all I have for you today, so I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great, thank you, Mrs. Rice. Members, questions? We'll start with Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Chair Payne, and I want to thank you for a great presentation. And you put up some interesting numbers and data here. I have a question around some of the new technologies around gray water with more and more opportunities for adoption around gray water, residential and otherwise. How much, with the adoption rate increasing over time, does that play a role as it relates to a potential solution to this problem?
You're recognized.
I don't have a lot of information on that. It's not been something that's been a big practice in our district, this gray water concept. I know that there was some legislation on that just last year to try to give some incentives to get that more off the ground as a concept, but we haven't had any of that that's come through our CFI program to date.
Follow up.
Have there been discussions as to how and it is relatively new technology, there are a number of vendors, but have there been discussions as to how that could potentially impact moving forward?
You're recognized.
Again, I don't really have any information on that. I could look into it.
Please, that would be great.
Sure.
You get that to me. Good. Thank you.
Sure. Representative Gottlieb, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. You have to forgive me because I'm kind of ignorant about this, but your slide number 8, when you're talking about wastewater treatment plant flow and reusing that. My question would be, what is it being used for, and have we, I assume it's been studied that it's safe for whatever the uses are.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes. So it took a huge paradigm shift quite a while ago just to get it to the place where it is today, which is the public access reuse. And, you know, there are rules in DEP's rules that really govern how that can happen and the standards that have to be met in order for that to happen. But yes, it has been proved safe, and it's been in practice for decades at this point. So it would be irrigation of lawns for individual homes and subdivisions, common areas and subdivisions, athletic fields. It is used, as I mentioned, for industry, like power plants, some use for agriculture. A big use, the most economical use, has really been golf courses to date, because you can send a larger quantity through a more concentrated system of piping. But it has been proven safe and in practice for quite some time. And again, we are seeing now that paradigm, you know, that focus shifting to perhaps the next big hurdle, which is potable reuse.
Oh, you good? Ranking Member Lanchowski, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you actually just led up to where my question was going on the potable reuse. So when most people hear drinking wastewater, it doesn't evoke a wonderful image. You mentioned a statewide survey indicating support. What are you hearing from the public, if anything, or what is kind of the plan to work against what most people's initial reaction would be to that concept?
You recognize.
Thank you. So there's been a lot of work done on this. You know, Len, I don't want to steal any of Ms. Bivey's thunder, but I do want to mention that potable reuse is not a terribly new concept. It's been done in other countries and other places within our own country. In California, this has been a really big focus, in Texas. So, you know, it has been successfully implemented elsewhere. You know, there's been a lot of work done on how to successfully engage with the public. Len is going to be representing Florida Reuse, which is an association. There's a national group associated with that has spent a lot of time developing materials and strategies for and tried to make the, you know, get the message out there. But a lot of the focus on how to try to describe this to the public is to really hit home on the treatment technologies. So there's multi barriers that are used for these types of projects to ensure that the resulting water quality is very safe. The science is there. So that's part of the messaging that we really need to try to get out there.
Follow-up. Other questions? I've got just a couple. You mentioned slide 8. You talked about the governing board set some standards, set some goals. Did they back their way into establishing these goals? How are those goals established? So we look at 145 MGD per day in 2040, or excuse me, that's the current number. How they set the goals for domestic wastewater reuse in that in your district? How do they arrive at that point?
Well, this will be a little bit of a guess, because that goal was set prior to me starting at the district. But I think if you look at the graph, it kind of indicates that when that goal was set, there was already a trend, and they were wanting to push that trend, see that trend continue, and maybe have a stretch a little bit. So we're seeing a nice trend upward there.
Okay, fair enough. I'm thinking 2040, it's hard to set goals that far out based on what we don't know is new technology arriving, new methods. So you've got to have a number. You'd have a goal. That's a good thing.
Yes.
And I think that's it for me. Other questions, members? Any other questions? Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks so much for being here. Just thinking about Florida's growth and new development that comes in and potential retrofitting. I'm just thinking about, you know, the efforts to expand, for example, rooftop solar and solar panels. And it's an investment for the homeowner. They also have to plug into some sort of grid system. What's the equivalent of that? Like, if I'm a homeowner and I'm like, I want to start having potable water in my home, is that even possible unless the municipality is adaptable to it? Maybe just speak more to, you know, new development versus retrofitting. And does that fit into your strategic plan at all?
You recognize.
So My understanding of the lay of the land is that trying to do anything on an individual homeowner basis is really not possible. There are some things that homeowners can do if they really want to make a personal improvement in terms of their footprint, if they have a septic tank, if there's not a way to connect a sewer, to put in an advanced septic tank. Rain barrels are always a great idea to have that water available for irrigation. But in terms of retrofitting an individual home, we do see retrofitting of neighborhoods, but that is extremely expensive to bring reclaimed water into a neighborhood that has already been fully established.
Anybody else? Ms. Rice, thank you for being here today. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you so much. Okay, members, we'll move into our next presentation from Lynn Spivey, discuss water reuse issues for local government perspective. Ms. Spivey is the Director of Utilities for Plant City, and she serves as the chair of the Potable Reuse Commission. Welcome, Ms. Spivey. Thank you for being here.
So I'll start by just saying again that I am a director of utilities, but I'm speaking from the voice of water reuse, which represents many utilities.
Ms. Spivey, can you pull your mic down just a little closer? Thank
okay.
you. Yep.
So a little bit about Water Reuse Florida. We are an association, professional association for the water industry, and we're represented by utilities across our state. Our association is a national association, which means that states across our country, we can reach out to them. So this is our national lifeline for all recycled water. Water Reuse Florida is our state section, and we are on the forefront of recycled water. So our practices really are coming as this paradigm shift from a one water perspective that I'll speak a lot more of. So we are recognized nationally as leaders in water reuse. We are using, as you've heard twice now, almost 1 billion gallons a day of reuse water, and we have another 50% of that water available. So it's really important that we understand the technology around recycled water and where this is going, because everything that comes in to our wastewater plants has to come out. So a little bit about the challenges that we face as utilities. So you've heard the DP now and the Water Management District talk about 67% of our state is under a water resource caution. That means that it either has some sort of water resource concern or in the 20-year horizon is projected to have a concern. This is a large portion of our state. And that's a confusing thing when you look around and you see this pristine water and then understand that 67% of our state has water resource concerns. So as a utility, this is some of the hurdles that we're up against. So besides the fact that a lot of our area is under this water resource caution area, we have this extreme growth that we're dealing with right now. So to the tune of 300,000 per year, that doesn't seem like a real big number, but think of it this way. The city of Lakeland is just over 100,000, or just about 120,000 now. We're adding three City of Lakeland's per year to our state. That's a tremendous amount of water. And it's water that our groundwater aquifer cannot support. So this is what we understand. We don't have the water source to promote this growth, and we have this recycled water that we have to do something with. So this is where we're at. We know potable reuse is the solution, and we know we can safely get there. So we're hoping that we can have this dialogue and discussion with this journey that we're taking. So a lot has happened in the past few years on our foundation for really successfully being resilient in our state with water. It really started in 2018 when associations got together and developed a Potable Reuse Commission, which I'll talk more about. In 2019, we were extremely excited to get Executive Order 1912 by Governor DeSantis, because that basically told us the state is serious about alternative water sources and that we're going to not only look heavily into it, but we're also going to fund it. So this was our really seize the moment in our community, in our water community, that we have this governor that recognizes this fact and we're ready to move forward. We asked that year for $250,000 for a public education campaign that was also needed to help engage the public in our water journey. This was a very successful campaign, and I'll discuss more about that. And then in 2020, we had two important things happen. We had Senate Bill 712, which basically directed the DEP to open up the rules and make them usable for potable reuse. And then we also had the publication of the Potable Reuse Commission implementation for a framework for implementing recycled water into our state. And I'll talk more about that. Then at the top of our pyramid, we had Senate Bill 64. This was water law that we did support, though it was challenging. We supported this because we understand that recycled water has to be a part of our future. The One Water Florida that I have on top is basically our state's commitment to an integrated approach to a holistic water management. So big things happened in the last few years. I want to talk a little bit more about the Potable Reuse Commission because this is truly an effort that our state should be really proud of. We came together in the public under sunshine to really understand how to implement recycled water. So the Water Reuse Association of Florida, the Florida Water Environment Association, which is the wastewater, and the American Water Works Association, utility councils, the water side, all three of our associations came together and said, let's do this together. We're all talking about recycled water. Let's come up with a way to discuss this and safely implement recycled water into our state. Not only was this an effort by our association, we knew we had to include water stakeholders, the people who are using water in our state. So that represents agriculture, Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, health, the Florida Department of Health from the Bureau of Epidemiology, Food and Waterborne Disease. That's a mouthful. Environmental from the Nature Conservancy. Academia and health, we had the Dean of the College of Public Health from the University of South Florida sit on our commission. And then our utilities, Hillsborough County, JEA in Jacksonville, Toho Water Authority, City of Tampa, City of Altamont Springs, and City of Plant City. So this was a huge effort. Together with the TEP and the water management districts as ex officio members, we met excruciatingly every month for 18 months and had three public workshops. And together, in consensus, we developed science-based recommendations. Public health and the environment always our top goal. And then we provided also a regulatory path looking at our Florida rules for how to implement recycled water safely. This Florida Potable Reuse Commission document, the framework, is available online. And this was the basis for 712. They asked, Senate Bill 712 asked the DEP to take the recommendations from the Potable Reuse Commission and put those into the regulatory changes that were needed. Mandy talked about the paradigm shift. This is a nationwide shift, really a worldwide shift, but really important for our nation, and especially for our state. So in the past, we took this treated wastewater effluent that Floridians, all of you, have paid to treat, and we throw it away. It's a disposal item. We understand now that that is the exact wrong way to look at it. Again, Floridians have invested billions into wastewater treatment. We are one of the most advanced in our country in wastewater treatment, heavily invested. So we understand now that water is, it's a finite source. There is no new water around. We have to treat every drop of water with respect. So this is a valuable asset. And this is this One Water perspective that we are really changed to, the understanding that the whole water cycle is important and we need to look at our projects holistically. So how serious are we about this One Water movement? Well, we've rebranded, so it must be serious. Across our country and across our state, we're seeing this commitment, not just branding our water, but branding our commitment to water. So One Water Florida is our state's effort to understand and act in this holistic water management realm. Shamelessly, I put Plant City right there in the middle. But all over our state, we're seeing this commitment to One Water. And when I spoke with our city manager about this, he wanted to know, you know, what's the angle you're coming at? you know, there was a lot of suspect behind this. And after hearing about what the country is doing, what the world is doing, and really how we're thinking about water, completely understood. So this is really our commitment to the entire water cycle. So this is the survey. This is survey results that came out of the 250,000 that was provided to us for a public education and outreach campaign. It was through the DP, and the Water Management District was selected, Southwest Florida Water Management District Communication Team. Excellent professionals. So statewide baseline was just to understand the citizens' attitudes about water, what they knew, what they understood. And then this survey was conducted in March of 2020, about just under 2,000 respondents, and a result statistically valid of 2.2%. So a really good percent made this very valid results. So the first thing we discovered is people know about reclaimed water. 75% of the respondents understood it. And I think this was the Purple Pipe movement really helped explain that this is a resource that can be used beneficially. So the other interesting fact was that people are much more prone to using this water for personal uses than the environmental. And I see this as a good thing. Floridians are very protective of their environment, and it's very confusing right now when you look at blue-green algae, red tide. So we have a very complicated relationship with water. We see it all around. We don't think we're without it. When I went to Colorado just recently, I was thirsty the entire time. You fly in and you see the reservoir at all-time low. We don't see that in Florida. What we see is a lot of water, sometimes too much water, sometimes water quality. So our relationship with water is complicated. But people know about it. They know about reclaimed water, and they understand it's a resource. We also, through the survey, helped educate. We know we're not popular in utilities, but we were surprised to see that, you know, two-thirds of respondents would rather drink bottled water than their pristine groundwater. So there's a lot of work we have to do here, is what we figured out. We need a better relationship with our customers. We explained indirect potable reuse and direct potable reuse. And after we provided this information, survey results changed quite a bit. Again, this is, at this point, not a surprise that people feel a lot more comfortable using potable reuse for personal uses, for anything from irrigation to baths to drinking. They're not so sure about the environment. So at the end of the survey, what we saw was that there really is overwhelming support for recycled water. There's still a lot that we have to explain, but we see that as a great opportunity. And there's a very small amount that really oppose it. And what we're seeing is that the opposition really comes from a lack of understanding. And we are hoping to bridge this gap. So One Water Florida, I would invite you all to please take a look at it. There's lots of great information on it, and we need feedback on if this information is palatable. How serious is Florida about the advanced treatment of this precious resource? Very. So we are doing pilots across our state. You can see we have 13 ongoing pilots. This is a lot of money invested right now. We invite you to come out. We love talking about this nerd talk. We'd love to bore you to death with it. But there's great information, and seeing this equipment in operation, I think, will help explain that there's nothing lacking in the science. There's nothing we don't understand about the water molecule. Most of what we're discussing now are, can our labs even measure to these low limits that are being discussed? So the best way to come out and see this and ask the questions, take a look at this list. We're all over the state right now, from North Florida to South Florida. There's information, and we're hoping that you reach out to us. We have just extended our pilot in Plant City, another additional 3 months just for public education and outreach, just to bring people in to see this. And we saw the difference when our city manager and our city commission came in and looked at it and looked at our information. Are we presenting the right information? Are we displaying it clearly enough? These are the kind of questions and information that we would like to hear more from y'all. Are we getting the point across? What are your concerns? What are your fears? How do we address them? So getting down to the meat of implementation of Senate Bill 64, again, on a water bill that we do support, we're not walking this alone. So though we are excited about moving up to the next level, the timeline is extremely challenging. So you heard the DEP discuss that they give themselves an A. I wouldn't go that high, but we understand the challenge that they're up against. We get this is a big thing to change our rules. So though we are impatient because the rules aren't still in draft, and really to meet the timeline of 2032, things have to be in place now. Right now, starting right now, last year, actually, in order to meet the timeline that we're talking about. It sounds like a long time, but to think that we have to study it for a year, pilot it for a year, design it for a few years, and then construct it for 5 years, and save millions, millions of dollars to do so, it's a challenge. So we don't walk it alone. We are prepared to do it, but we need our partners to walk in the same step with us. So your support is needed in so many ways. Again, we need more dialogue, but we also need money. So we did a lot with the $250,000 that was given to us. The state worked incredible. We did great work, and we moved the needle quite a bit. We can do a lot more. So points that I'd like to leave you with. Integrated water management is critical to Florida's future. Recycled water is an important part of the solution that we have already invested billions into. So in educating our Florida population is critical because our utilities, we don't provide a service. We are partners with our customers. They own a portion of the utility. So it behooves them to better understand what we are doing and to work together for solutions. So with that, I will take questions. Chair Payne.
Thank you, Mrs. Spivey, for your presentation. Member, we're in questions. Representative Cheney, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Payne. Thank you for your presentation. I'm looking at slide 12, the pilot project map. And I believe it was stated that to meet the growth, what we have to do is address potable water with the gray water. So that's the target. But of the 13 pilots, only 5 of them have potable water, if I'm reading that correctly.
You're recognized.
So why would it be so low if that's really where we need to be going? Did those communities not want that kind of pilot? What was driving that?
So a lot drives whether or not a municipality needs to go to potable reuse. I'll give my city for an example, because we're probably a medium-sized city that represent a good amount of Florida. We are landlocked, and we are between two regional water supply authorities, Tampa Bay Water and the Polk Cooperative. So our water demand has to be managed very tightly if we want to grow. We don't have another alternative water source, so potable reuse makes sense to us because everything that comes out of our wastewater treatment plant has to go somewhere. So instead of big rapid infiltration basins or extensive purple pipe, our choice at this point is to secure our water's future. So potable reuse was the right choice for us. Other communities are Pinellas County. All over, they have invested in purple pipes, so they have this large investment already there to where they can potentially meet the 90%. To put those in new communities is very difficult and very expensive. So we have Florida communities throughout our state that are in different situations. They may be coastal, they may be landlocked, they may be small enough to where the purple pipe can extend throughout the area. So we have different situations. This is why we need as many of these beneficial tools in our toolbox. Even in Plant City, we're doing a portion of potable reuse, a portion of wetlands, you know, a portion of it goes to surface water discharge that we've proved was beneficial. So one municipality can have many different options. As far as the investment for a pilot, we are seeing more. We have two more now going into operation. I think Clay County is up there. They're doing exciting projects between wetlands and also taking some off of the rapid infiltration basins to put through a potable reuse pilot. Polk County is building a demonstration facility right now. But these demonstration and pilots are costly. $1 million and I'm a small city. So we're trying to put these demonstration facilities together because they really do help solidify the need and to show our local communities the safety of them. But there are a lot of money. Our rules are still in draft. We're not sure if our pilot information is going to be accepted. So we're in this transition phase, the beginning of this transition phase, where we're trying to understand the money and we're trying to convince our commissions that this is necessary. Then we're trying to save for the money. And we're also trying to work with the DEP on these rules that have been drafted for a couple of years now.
Ms. Spivey, would you, for the sake of the committee, explain a little bit about indirect and direct potable reuse so that, look, we've got a lot of education to do in this committee, a lot of learning. This is foreign to a lot of people. I've been the benefactor of being around you guys for 6 years. But if you can help explain that, that may help relieve some of the lack of understanding on some of the issues.
Sure. I'll try to start with kind of the basics of where we are with wastewater treatment in general. So all of our wastewater that is treated has to meet standards when it leaves our facility, no matter where it goes. It's meeting a standard. If it goes to a rapid infiltration basin, which is basically the big sand basins, they have to meet a certain level, the 10-10-12 that was mentioned. So we are limited on nitrogen, on phosphorus, on suspended solids, things like that. If you are going to a surface water discharge, you have to meet a higher standard. That's a 5531 kind of permit, lower in the nutrients. And then direct and indirect potable, so this is taking it to the next level of treatment. We already, at the point of 5531, are meeting most primary and secondary drinking water standards at that point, almost drinking water. The next level is direct or indirect potable reuse. This is an additional level of treatment. And if you go indirect, you're using the environment for an additional step of treatment, whether it's we have beautiful sand filters in Florida. Our entire state is a sand filter. So we use the kiss of nature, as we call it, or we put it into the ground and then treat it once we bring it back up. That's indirect. Direct potable is taking it all the way, meeting all drinking water requirements and going directly from the advanced treatment plant to a distribution, water distribution pipes.
Okay, follow-up questions. Yes, sir, Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up to your presentation, not necessarily that question. You've mentioned numerous times we're investing billions of dollars. Obviously, I think we can all see the ecological benefit. I assume there's a cost-benefit analysis. Investing this money now will save us more money in the future, or is there a way to sort of explain the economic benefit of this investment or the return on investment?
Ms. Spivey.
Let's see if I can, how can I answer that question accurately? So there are cost-benefit analysis right now as of the cost of different kinds of treatment. I wish I had included that slide. I took it out. Didn't think we'd get to it. But I will include that information. So we have comparable costs of treatment. What I think is hard to put into a cost-benefit analysis is what happens if we don't do this. We are so blessed in this state to basically pull our water up out of the aquifer and disinfect it with chlorine and send it right out. Those days are numbered. They're numbered. And the misperception that what we're doing is an environmental challenge, the reality of not doing this is the real environmental challenge, because overpumping in our, we understand what happens when we overpump our aquifer very well. We open up car systems everywhere. Residential wells go dry because they're much lower, 80 feet. Our municipal wells go 300-400 plus feet. So when you start pulling out of our aquifer, you're drying up all those wells that are residential. My well is only 100 feet in my personal home. So we know the effects of not doing this will be catastrophic. It's difficult to put a cost-benefit analysis around that. But I think we need to do something that will help show the cost of not doing this.
Representative Escamante, you have a question.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks for your great presentation. I'm just curious when it comes to, you mentioned how blessed we are in Florida, and I 100% agree that other states are in very dire situations because they are experiencing droughts, they are experiencing severe water shortages to the point where, when we travel and fly out of some of these airports in some of the states on the West Coast, they have like warning signs in the bathrooms around, please don't use as much water or try to be thoughtful to water. And so I'm curious from your experience and from the association, what are some models in other states that you look towards, research in other states where they're doing, you know, really good work that we can mimic or model, and maybe just some, you know, best lessons from other states as well on the PR side of educating the public? Because I do remember in the past years, backlash and, you know, slogans like toilet to tap and things that kind of scare people away from these subject matters. So maybe just some insight from what other states are doing, because I do feel like our days are numbered. And so I'd love that insight.
You're recognized.
That's what makes the Water Reuse Association such a useful association for us, because we get to share what's happening across the country, which is really quite frightening. Like you say, when you're sharing water across states, that's what California does. From California to Colorado, they're sharing that surface water. We call that surface water nature's toilet. We see the water fights, water rights, water bills and taxes. That's the future if we don't turn this around really quickly. I mean, the blessing is that we have a resource that we can turn around really quickly and not get there. But this is why California is adopting rules right now. So we're on this horse race with other states, and we're sharing information and policy about how are you implementing this safely. But we're beginning to be in the really behind, because California, Texas, they have to put regulations. They are out of water. You go to El Paso, Texas, they are so on board with their recycled water. They have t-shirts that say, your number two is my number one, and they wear it proud. So we are trying to show the examples in other states, but Florida, we're very unique in we want to do it our own way. So we have to tread that lightly. We can't say, well, California's doing this. That's not always our best policy. But we have these examples. I mean, when we will be attending the Water Reuse National Symposium next month, or the month after, March, I believe. And we'll hear stories from South Africa about the two-minute songs, shower songs in the morning. That's your time to take a shower. The song's over, you're done, water's off. So we get water scarcity. We're fortunate in Florida that we probably won't see that, but we will have no more cheap water. That's where we'll be at, where these technologies that we're using, membrane technologies and other advanced technologies, we'll have to treat all of our water that way. That's our concern.
Representative Mooney.
Thank you, Chair.
Recognized.
Thank you,
Chair. Sorry about that earlier.
That's okay. You want to call me Manny, that's fine. First of all, applaud the association for what they're doing. You know, I think it's long overdue, obviously. So a couple of quick questions. Obviously, to touch on the cost, we know the cost will be astronomical. It's not just reuse and how you get it from point A to point B. drinkable, but it's also how you get it to your homes, how, you know, the number of cities who have not upgraded systems, the wastewater facilities are leaking into our aquifer, our groundwater on a daily basis. Look no further than Broward County a couple summers ago when they had that massive disaster that struck. So we have multiple layers of problems to address besides the technology, which is probably the easiest part of the deal. It's probably the cheapest part of the deal in reality. But, you know, in South Florida, we've discovered a lot of pharmaceuticals in our fish that we fish for. Is the association addressing pharmaceuticals in the water, and how do you remove them? Because removing effluent and removing nutrients, again, that technology is pretty simple. It's out there. Let's say it's not cheap, but it's there. But pharmaceuticals require a whole new level to remove from the water for reuse. So we can't just be pumping reuse back in to your homes in Plant City that, you know, the layer of pharmaceuticals is quite high. So is there any studies being done on how to do that? Because, I mean, you guys have yourself in a pickle when it comes to research and how do you get from point A to point B. It's just not a simple task. And the layers, so I'm assuming that every layer, and I was surprised not to see desalinization plant in that circle on page 6. That was a surprising thing. I mean, I know that Colorado doesn't do desal, obviously, but we have desal in Florida. You're going to have to recharge the aquifer somehow. It's not going to always just be from reuse and potable waters back into the aquifer. So what's being done in that? Is it all being addressed, or is it?
It is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear the answers to what's actually being done, pharmaceuticals
and
in particular.
And we love to talk about this stuff.
You're recognized to address that lengthy question.
Thank you, sir. So I'll talk a little bit about the technology. Right now, between the membrane and non-membrane systems that we have piloted, we have thousands and thousands of point of analytics to prove that we can safely remove these pharmaceuticals down to trace levels. Some of our concern right now is grappling to exactly what low level, because our labs can't even measure to some of these low levels. So we don't have concerns about our ability to remove pharmaceuticals or any emerging contaminant. It's, as Ms. Rice stated, we have systems that have multiple levels of barriers, so multiple levels of different kind of membranes or non-membrane systems, advanced oxidation systems, that can remove anything from the water molecule. The water molecule is really amazing. It is a carrier. It can always be brought back to its natural state. So we are not concerned about the science to do so. We're more concerned about the science to measure. On top of that, again, I have mentioned that our Floridians need to be more of our partners in this venture, because this is an area that we can, especially pharmaceuticals, I think we can have a multifaceted approach to tackling it, educating assisted living, hospitals, and the public on not flushing pharmaceuticals is number one, or doing better pretreatment before it comes to us. So there's a lot of ways to tackle this safely, and this is the dialogue that we need to have with our general public on what we're doing, how we're doing this, to what levels, to the point where you would need 200 years of taking in water to get one dose of Advil kind of, you know, information that we need to share, because this isn't, at this point, there isn't anything about the science that is impossible for taking water right to drinking water levels.
Members of the questions? I've got a couple of questions, or at least one. excuse me. What is the percentage, or is there a percentage of ocean outfall reduction we've seen as a result of greater implementation of reuse in the last several years?
That is a question that we'll have to get information. I don't know the percentage of ocean outfall.
Okay.
And does the DEP?
Mm-hmm. Representative Kilbrey, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe you can answer this, maybe you can't. With the estimate of the number of people that are moving to Florida, and based on the aquifer, when do we run out of water?
You're recognized to take a stab at that one.
Well, I think the water management districts have done a good job at looking at the demand forecast, is what we call that, how much water we're going to need in a 20-year horizon. And some of the numbers that Ms. Rice presented here were the shortfalls. So we already know we're in a shortfall for the next 20 years, and that we won't be able to support that growth. So I think as far as when we're talking about adding three cities the size of Lakeland a year, we'll first, I think, see a slowly degrading of our pristine aquifer. So it's difficult to say when that number is going to be too much, but there are already cities that are experiencing saying no to growth, moratoriums on certain kind of growth. The city of Plant City is at that stage where we're very concerned about some big water users that are coming in and saying no. So I think you'll see that first, looking at a local city or county's water demand and somebody potentially very profitable coming in and having to say no. We've had two of these cases already in our city.
Good. Ms. Spivey, thank you for being here today. Great presentation. Thank you for your time. You know, members, I think today is a good example of, for all of us that have some history in water space, for us to understand that we've got a large, diverse group of understanding. I'm committed to trying to make each member understand more, and your commitment to try to understand what we should be doing and what we can be doing working with our partners, working with our staff. I want to encourage you to ask questions, not only when we have presentations, but some of this is extremely complex. I mean, there's a lot to the water space. That's why we have experts have spent their entire life there. And it's a changing dynamic, as you heard from the presentations. We've seen changes in the last several years. I've been kind of involved in trying to understand more about water in the last 6 years, been tapped to run some water bills, and it started long before I got in this space. I think it's germane for us to understand more about the hydrologic cycle, that there's a certain amount of water that's on Earth, and that's all we ever have. It's just redistributed in different manners throughout the Earth. Most people don't like to think about recycling of water, but that's what we do. That's what we've done throughout history. So I'm encouraged to make sure that each of you have the opportunity to ask as many questions, study these issues as much. Some of these presentations are very complex, but make sure you reach out not only to me personally, but to the staff, and talk to associations as they come through and lobbyists as they come through about the issue, so that we get a better grasp of where, as you heard today, where we need to be heading, what we need to be thinking about, and how we're going to resolve this problem. Because I'm committed that we'll resolve this issue regardless of what it takes. I think funding is a big piece of it. We work closely with our partners in the appropriations area, not only in the House, but in the Senate and the governor, to make sure we're doing what we can to fund those issues, especially the pilot projects, and we're seeing good results from those. So I think you know, just the experience that we garner from hearing these presentations, even though they're extremely complex, a lot of confusion as to terms, we're going to commit. The staff is trying to give us maybe a better 101 understanding. I don't know. I'm putting Tiffany on the spot here, but an understanding of some of the terms and definitions. When you hear NPDES, what does that mean? When you hear, you know, million gallons per day, what does that mean in terms of acronyms? So that's what we're going to try to do, because this is not just a committee for a year or two. This is a committee that we hope will be sustainable, that will be a process committee that looks at no end, that continues to process the idea of what we do in the state for water use, water resources. A lot of it will fall back in Chair Stevenson's committee. Underwater resources. But thank you for your attention today. Presenters, thank you for your input. And unless there's anything else in front of the committee, Representative Mooney gives a motion that we arise and we're adjourned. Thank you.